What if I didn't know? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing this song. When the red, red robin comes bop, bop, bopping. When the red, red robin comes bop, bop, bopping. When the red, red robin comes bop, bop, bopping along.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Red Robin podcast with me, Jarkoy Ad, and co-host Chris Johnson. Well, of course, we are sponsored by 360 Chartered Accountants and Budget Tyres Auto Centre. All their website and links are in our link tree, so get following them, guys. And as we've already spoke, there's discount at Budget Tyres if you are a Hulk KR pass holder. Chris, it's great to speak to you. We're going to start on a bit of a somber mood this episode, obviously, with the news of the passing of Johnny Whiteley. Really sad news, obviously affiliated with Hull FC more than Hull Kingston Rovers, but a man that probably tied in the derby and what it means. And I remember his famous saying when he said, you can't have an FC without KR and KR without FC. And he was one of them who Neil Hudgell really became friends with. And I'll read his statement in a moment, but really sad news that Johnny Whiteley's passed away at 91, and he was a friend of both clubs.
Yeah, and he's someone who really transcends the sport of rugby league in the city, isn't he? And he's, you know, one of the few people who unites the city, really, because, you know, you look at Clive Sullivan, you know, another player who's represented both clubs, done it with aplomb. And what you could say about Johnny Whiteley is, you know, what a great guy. You know, anyone you speak to about Johnny Whiteley, anyone who's had the pleasure of meeting him, anyone who's had the pleasure of being in his company, I'll never have a bad word to say about him. And it is a real shame. Obviously, he's lived up to a ripe old age. And what you'd say, he's lived a very full life. You know, it's amazing when I was looking back at his career, the fact he finished playing in 1965. You know, how long ago was that? And you look at everything that he's done since then in his coaching career, obviously coaching at Rovers. And it wasn't just what he did professionally, it was what he's done for the amateur game in the city, how he's championed youth sport, and he was also involved in football, boxing, rugby league. You know, he lived a really full life, so it's definitely a sad time for obviously the supporters of Hull FC, Hull FC the club, but also for the city of Hull.
Yeah, definitely, and I think he's one of them, you realise that rivalries go probably aside when people like him, when Roger passed away, when Colin Hutton, especially Colin, who had affiliations with Hull FC as well. But like you mentioned there, Chris, he actually coached Hull Kingston Rovers, and he was the last Great Britain coach to win with Great Britain with the Lions down under. And that was in, I think, 1970. So it shows that he had a really high credential. He had a really good CV. And I'll read the statement off Neil Hudgell. He said, we are also desperately sad to hear the passing of Johnny Whiteley, MBE, a true gentleman in every sense of the word, a legend of the sport and of the city of Hull. Johnny achieved everything and did it with such dignity. He was a man of great humility, wisdom and humour. We all learnt a lot from Johnny over the years, and we were lucky to share his company so often at Sewell Group Craven Park, and I will forever cherish so many of his wonderful stories. A black and white to the core, we know just how much his pain our friends across the Wetherill feel today. Sleep well, Johnny. May you roam the range forever. That was from Neil Hudgell, Hull Kingston Rovers owner. And from me and Chris, obviously, we send our condolences to Johnny Whiteley's family. So, Chris, we move on. Obviously, this time last week, we was full of optimism. We was doing the round one preview with a fans forum with Mike, with Mark and Craig. And then Hull Kingston Rovers performed on the Friday night, or not performed. And it was a typical round one performance. We're going to go through the game, aren't we? Rovers losing 24 points to 10. Not the best start to the season, mate. Not at the races for Hull Kingston Rovers on Friday night. As flat as a pant in the MKM Stadium.
Yeah, and it was MKM Stadium. I just got what you said then. yeah, mate, it was one of it. I mean, it was a fantastic podcast what we've done with Mikey and the lads. It was great to get them on board. And I felt there was a real buzz around the place before the game, especially if you was at Craven Park. You know, highest attendance for a long while. It was great to see so many people there backing the boys. There was a bit of a buzz around Craven Street in the stadium. You really felt it. And, you know, the atmosphere during the game was as flat as the performance on the pitch, and it was a bit of a strange one, wasn't it? You know, I think Rovers never really got going. There was obviously, you know, fundamental errors that Wigan capitalised on, but, you know, if you looked at that if you could bottle that optimism before the Wigan game, I wish you could, because I think we're all in need of a bit of a dose of it now, because from the highs of pre-season and the optimism shown there, it's all just gone a little bit flat, hasn't it?
It has, and it was one of them days, wasn't it? You could tell as soon as the game kicked off, Wigan was on the upper hand, and then that first kick obviously spilt by Sam Wood, which eventually went to Jake Bibby. We're going to speak about Sam Wood in depth, mate, but I think that first try, it was, you really could tell what was going to happen throughout the 80 minutes. A bit of poor positioning from Sam, who was obviously struggling on debut, but probably gifting Jake Bibby the easiest try, and I think that kind of gave Wigan the leeway to think, do you know what, we've got the chance to do with these quite easily. I think we let them early doors bully us down the middle, and there was making plenty of meters, and that try on 8 minutes probably just set the tone for the rest of the game.
Yeah, it was and what you say about the try is Sam Wood weren't under much pressure there, was he?
Nobody there, was he?
He wasn't under much pressure at all. It was a bit of a not an aimless kick, but it was a bit of a punt up into the air, try and put Rovers under a bit of pressure. I think Wigan fully expected us to catch it and then defend, you know, from the 20-metre mark. And obviously, it didn't transpire as that. I think Jake Bibby won't believe his luck when he saw the ball spill. And really, it didn't get much better after that, did it? I think that really set the tone from the performance. And you felt the bubble burst a little bit amongst the crowd. And from that, you know, early game optimism, you really felt like that mistake sort of just punctured the balloon a little bit. And I think Sam Wood never really recovered from that mistake.
No, I think the full right-hand side didn't, and we move on. Obviously, Rovers were 6-0 down at that point, buddy, and even the play up to the Mikey Lewis individual try, which was brilliant. Jez was going to put a drop off from Corbin Sims. It wasn't working out. The attacking play was nowhere to be seen. And some nights you do need a bit of individual magic. And that man was Mikey Lewis, in a great show and go, doing his typical celebration. But it looked like on a night where Ulkingston Rovers couldn't provide much attacking threat, it was going to be left down to the individuals. And that's what Mikey had to do. What a fantastic try.
Yeah, and that's what he's there in the team for, isn't it? To be able to produce them bits of magic, them scores out of nowhere where it's not expected, you know, and for me, that's what Mike Lewis was all about. So it was great to see him score that try. And it'd be great to get your opinion on it, Joe, because even though Mike Lewis scored that try, what were your thoughts at that time? Did you see any patterns of play in the team to suggest that, you know, he was going to be able to capitalise on that and really then take it to Wigan?
No, I didn't, mate. I'll be honest. I thought Jez struggled to dictate the tempo. Even Matt Parcell, when he eventually came on, I thought he really struggled. Even when we had both of them on, which has worked so much over the past, you know, year in 2021, which saw us go to the semi-final. But it just looks like a totally different team, that round one. I mean, don't get me wrong, we're not saying that we're going to get relegated or we're not going to get anywhere near we did last year. But you've got to start with a bit of intent. And I thought Abdul, Mikey, Jez, the key senior players, we couldn't even set up a two moves. We couldn't even put a wedge system on or a drop-off, whereas Wigan really was showing their flair. And I think their next try, we've been banging on about scrums coming back. Is there any bonus of it? Well, obviously from that Jai Field try, there certainly is. And the next two tries after that, a little bit unlucky. Takarangi not meeting it in the air, and then Liam Marshall running 100 metres. And then again, about 5 minutes later, another error from Sam Wood, quite a comical error. And three tries within the space of 15 minutes. Two very, very well-worked tries, in a sense, because I thought the back play for the second try, when they passed it down the line, when we could have just intercepted and scored, there was only 5 metres off their own line. It just showed that Wigan have probably got a bit of their attitude back, and I've mentioned it on a few places where I've been speaking about the game. Sean Wayne looks like their biggest signing alongside Matty Peake, because they had that intense and that do-or-die attitude, and I think them three tries certainly showed that Wigan are probably going to get back up to the ways like there wasn't last year.
Yeah, I just want to take you back to that second Wigan try. I mean, as although Rovers weren't really in the game, it still took Wigan to the 25th minute for him to get the next score on the board. And it was one of them tries where I looked at it and I thought, if Rovers had scored that, I think we've heard a bit more about it, you know, especially on the back of, you know, some of the rugby league was playing last season. I think a lot more had been made of that try, because it was quite inventive, wasn't it, at the time?
Yeah.
You don't think there was anything more that Rovers could have done to prevent that, or was it just a case of, you know, it happens in rugby league. It was pretty basic. Why don't you kick it to the fastest man on the pitch and see what he can do?
It was, and I think people need to switch the minds back to when scrums were proper. A lot of teams don't defend with a fullback from a defensive scrum because you don't expect it. And that's what Matty Pete, Sean Wayne, Lee Breers and Sean O'Loughlin have probably been going over for the past 6 months in pre-season. They've been saying we can catch teams out like that. They've got Jai Field, Cade Custon, Liam Marshall, three are probably the fastest people in Super League that they've got on one left-hand side. And there was no way Takarangi or Sam Wood was going to catch him. It was really inventive. I think we'll
tell you what, though, Joe. I'll tell you what, it was nearly close. Ryan Hall.
Ryan Hall.
He was
very
absolutely
close.
Bust a gut to get. I tell you what, if there was another
10 meters,
another 10 meters, I think Ryan Hall would have caught him. So it was a fantastic effort. But I just wanted to say, how big an impact do you think it'll be that scrums only got introduced back this season, sort of late in pre-season?
Yeah.
And clubs won't have had time to practice really that much on them. How much of an impact do you think that'll have had, and do you think we'll see some more tries scored from scrums in these early rounds of Super League as teams adjust to it?
I do, and I mean, you look at our game against Huddersfield in pre-season, it wasn't a kick, it was a set move that we did really well, and Sam Wood went in and scored, didn't he, at Sewell Group Craven Park. I think it depends what type of manager or coach you're going to have. I do think you'll see a lot more tries. I don't think we'll see it every single game. It's obviously going to be judging the weather, the situation, the scoreline at the time. But I think fair play to Wigan because they went for it and the court was napping. And ultimately, again, you mentioned about that bubble bursting, them three tries, you can make an argument for every single one killing the Rovers' mood. The first one, right, we've caught us off guard. They've gone 90 metres without laying a finger on them. The second one, it could have easily gone to Takarangi and we'd have scored. And then they passed it to Field, who give Marshall, and we had no chance of stopping him apart from Ryan Hall, a valiant effort. And then the third try, it was obviously, we was just crumbling, weren't we, in the back end of that first half. And Sam Wood, his head was already down there. Another high kick, a bit more pressure this time than the first one, but even still, we've seen him take a lot harder efforts than that in the air, and unfortunately it wasn't Sam Wood's night. And you concede three tries in the last 15 minutes and you're kind of thinking, the game's done and dusted, wasn't it? At that time, with the attitude and the way we didn't seem we was talking with each other, it looked a very, you know, displaced all Kingston Rovers side, and one that we hadn't seen in 2021.
Yeah, and of course, if Wigan had scored their kicks, it'd have gone in at half-time a lot worse than what it was, wasn't it? Was there anything in that first half, Joe, that you saw that, you know, going at half-time, you know, when the players coming out in the second half, was there anything for you to hang your hat out and go, do you know what, if we can do that a bit better, you know, we might get a different outcome come the final whistle?
Yeah, I did, actually. I thought as bad as we were, I don't think Wigan, apart from the tries that we gifted them, it was a very... The game was ebbing and flowing, wasn't it? It was our side, their side. There wasn't much in it. I do think Wigan looked the better team, but Rovers did have a lot of chances. You look at the Takarangi flick on the first tackle. You look at the knock-on from, I think it was Jez or Corbin Sims on tackle two after a really good defensive effort. And it just looked that if Wigan were playing at 50% of their potential, we'd match it and go, we'll play at 30, so you have a chance. It was kind of like there was so much for Rovers in that game. But when you can't string passes together, when you struggle in defence and your structure's not there in attack, it's hard at the best of the times, never mind against a team of Wigan's calibre. But I don't think there was absolutely brilliant. I think there was very structured and there was very defensively sound. I think if we'd have played for another 80 minutes, we'd have only won't even have scored another 10 points. I thought we was there for the taking. But I wouldn't say Wigan blew us away. It was just the three or four quite freaky tries. You know, you'll probably never see a sequence of tries like that ever again, hopefully, against us, because on another day, Rovers would have done better there. But probably round one, a bit nervous, still a bit in pre-season. And you've got the like, you had Coote, you had Frankie Halton, who'd been not putting in the deep end, but found out a few hours before that Dean Hadley wasn't playing and he has to play second row. Ultimately ended up probably being our best performer, but the kid's never played a Super League game in his life, and Coote obviously wasn't ready. We'll speak about his injury soon, but just on the night, you probably got to put your hand up, Chris, and say you got beat by a better team, and there's no shame in that. It's just how you react, but I just thought it was very flat on and off the pitch.
Yeah, and for me, I thought the key to us making any kind of comeback was us scoring first in the second half. I think it was vital that we got points on the board first. And you just mentioned Frankie Alton. I think a key moment was on 55th minute when Frankie Alton looked like he was just about to score the line.
But
yeah, Wigan's defence kept him out. And I think that was pretty much where you thought, it's not going to happen here, is it? Because, like you said, the work Sean Wayne's been doing with Wigan in defence was really starting to show through. And you know, whatever we seem to try, just weren't coming off for us, was it? And as the minutes, as the clock ticked down, it just looked ever increasingly like it wasn't going to happen. One thing that I did want to mention, though, Joe, was obviously Jez Litton starting at hooker over Matt Parcell. For me, although it was, it's difficult to say because we was chasing the game, I thought we looked a little bit more urgent. We had a bit more go forward when Matt Parcell was on the pitch than when we had Jez Litton on the pitch.
Yeah, I think Jez will admit it wasn't his best ever game for Old Kingston Rovers, and he'll learn from that. I thought even when Parcell came on and played as the 13 with Jez at nine, I thought, oh, here we go. You know, this is when we can start. Hopefully them two can bring a bit of magic. I know Parcell scored off the ricocheted kick from Coot. But yeah, it's one of them. And I imagine that he might start Parcell on Saturday against Huddersfield, but he's learning. And like Tony Smith said, we got beat by a better team. Matty Pete outcoached him. And we'll take a lot from that game, I hope. It's just one of them when you start, there's all this hype, isn't there, about the round one and we big it up and we get carried away doing our podcast and then you're performing like that and already people are going, ah, one trick pony. It's up to the boys now. You've got to go and prove them wrong because we've proved if we turn up with that attitude and that performance on our own patch, teams are going to really easily beat us. And you've got to snap out of it, haven't you? It's early doors, but with Super League, Chris, you don't want to get a few games in and you're still trying to fight for that first win.
Yeah, and you know, let's put things in perspective. It is the first game.
Against a very good team.
Against a very good team, a rejuvenated Wigan, who have obviously made drastic changes to their coaching setup, because they're not happy with how they've been performing over a number of years now. So let's not forget that Wigan are no mugs here. I think what Rovers fans will be disappointed is just that there didn't seem to be that fight, that spark, that off-the-cuff rugby that we'd become used to. And it all just seemed a bit flat. And like I said at the very start, the atmosphere for me was really flat, you know, considering it was our biggest attendance for a long time. I know some people have said, well, the atmosphere reflected the performance on the pitch, but, you know, come on, first game of the season, we're absolutely buzzing.
After getting to a semi.
Yeah, I thought the crowd could have done a lot more to lift the boys on Friday night. And pretty much after the first, 10 minutes, you know, you could hear a pin drop at times. It was that flat. So, you know, I'm hoping that we have better nights at Craven Park. Of course I do. And I hope, you know, we have better atmospheres, because one thing that was apparent last season is that when the fans got behind the boys responded. And I think sometimes we can't rely on the performance to set the fans and the tempo and the crowd and all that. I think sometimes we can make it happen.
Yeah. Here's a question for you. Do you think Craven Street affects the atmosphere at all?
Ooh, different. And of course, improved Craven Street. It was.
I didn't go in it, but it looked really vibrant. A lot of people, I mean, I've only been in it once and I'm going to go in this season. I'm going to try it out. But a lot of people's argument is because people are waiting until the last 5 minutes to get in there. People aren't standing where they normally stand because it gets a little bit busier. People are more bothered about standing behind so they can go get the food or the drinks. That's just that I've seen a few comments on the forums. I've seen a few comments on social media. I'm not really in a position to judge. You've been in there a lot more than me, but maybe that could have been a factor. Or was it just a freezing Friday night in February and we was pretty crap?
Yeah, because all I'd suggest is that the games when we did have Craven Street last season,
electric,
you know, were the best atmospheres we've had for a long time down at Craven Park. So, it was just a strange one, because I've seen lots of reasons people have given why the atmosphere was a bit flat. I think ultimately Craven Street adds to it, and I think the fact you're able to get people in the ground sooner, you know, people are more likely to have a drink, you know, all that kind of stuff should really add to the atmosphere. And there's no doubt that the performance wasn't great. And when you see a flat performance, you sort of stood there shrugging your shoulders, you know, you're a bit pissed off, all this kind of stuff. So I can understand why it's hard to get really behind the boys. But I think, like you said, ultimately them three tries in the first half just killed it, didn't it? It just killed it as a spectacle. And I think it killed it for us in the stands, and I think it killed it for the players, because I don't think the players really then believed that they could get going again. But obviously one player who played against Wigan but won't be featuring against Huddersfield is Albert Vette, who has received a 2-game suspension. The club have decided not to appeal it. Tony Smith saying that Look, if we want to protect players and we want to protect players, you know, across all teams, then we shouldn't really be appealing such bans and tackles and stuff like that. What did you make of the Albert Vettey tackle and subsequent ban?
I'll be honest with you, mate. Even if I took my Rovers hat off, I'd say there wasn't much in it. I think you look at all of the incidents over the weekend, and it's a record how many people have been in discipline, you know, the disciplinary books, and even down to the Championship, you've got people. I don't know if you watched the game on Premier Sports on Monday night, but a bloke, that Defogging Johnson's got a 5-match ban for what he's done on, maybe even more for what he did on Aaron Smith, who used to play for Rovers, of course, on loan. There's some weird rules into this year, and I think we're going to see a lot of sendings off. Obviously, Vettey's went a bit unnoticed because I think Wigan ended up going on scoring, didn't they? And it was kind of like, oh, it was in the passage of play. It's not come at the best of time, has it? Obviously, we'll speak about the lads who were coming back for the trip to the John Smiths, but I think if you're going to push it, it's got to be a one. I think they're not justifying some of the calls already. I mean, again, I'm not saying it because he's an old fan and we have our arguments against him and we know what type of bloke he is, but if Jake Connor gets one match ban for what he did against Wakefield and Vettey gets two for that, or even Dylan Napper ended up getting, he's got about 3 to 5, hasn't he? You've got to back your decisions up and you've got to keep consistent, and I think the RFL board at the minute aren't doing that, and they'll learn from it. They've got a lot of critics these past few days because of what's happened and how many people are getting banned, and if it goes on you might have to field the reserve team if we keep getting bans like that. But yeah, it's such a shame because again, you take Lachlan Coote out, you take Albert Vettey, and you're putting people in a patched up squad already, aren't you, after what, you know, two pre-season matches in a game. But Albie will be available for the Saints game, will he? Same as what Lachlan Coote should be. But we're going to miss him. We're going to miss him against a very physical pack in Huddersfield, and a very physical pack against Lee Radford's Cass. Obviously, I'm watching Cass as we speak now. They're playing very much down the middle, and I expect they'll do that throughout the season. But it's just a shame, isn't it? Because I think Vettey is starting to get a bit more of a key role in the middle of the park, and having two matches off, 2 weeks without playing, is not going to do him or the side any good, buddy.
No, and there'll be no one more disappointed than Albert Vettey, who's been absolutely jumping out a bit to get out there. He's determined to have a full season for Rovers. He wants to be on the pitch for as many minutes as possible. He wants to have the biggest impact he can. So the fact he's going to be missing two games so early on in the season is going to... it's going to hurt him. I think as supporters, we've got to be realistic in our expectations sometimes, because we've seen it in so many seasons gone by where match officials are clamped down on things early on in the season, and it almost becomes silly season, doesn't it, where they're almost pulling up everything. And obviously, we've seen that in the subsequent sendings off, sin binnings and then bannings that players have received. I think you'll see it for for at least the first 3-4 opening rounds of Super League, and then it tends to quieten off, doesn't it? And then players get a bit more leeway after that. It's scary though, because you just think going into each tackle, each collision, now what's going to happen from it? Where are players going to be with it? Because
I think putting a punt on a red card on Sky Bet's quite tasty.
Well,
now,
I'm sure the odds are a little bit shorter now, mate, Now, I think what you would say is, though, that quite rightly so, I find it hard when players complain about, they want protection and stuff like that, and then they complain when they're banned for a high shot, and any contact around the head now seems to be deemed as bad. So it's almost, you should expect a red, yellow card, depending on the contact. Any tackles where you've got a clenched fist or... you know, ultimately it comes down to poor technique as well a lot of the time. So I think we're going to see at least a few more sin binnings and red cards as we go through these opening rounds, mate. And just hopefully it doesn't affect Rovers.
No, and before we obviously wrap up the Wigan game and we speak about the reserves and the women's team, before my interview with Jenna Brooks, there's one person who... on that right-hand side, and we'll discuss the right-hand side as well, was Brad Takarangi, who got a lot of pelters, and rightly so. Tony Smith's come out this week, spoke to the whole Daily Mail and said he knows he's got a player in there, he just needs to calm down. Takarangi just seems like he's trying a bit too hard, and I think he's killing his right-hand side with his jumping out in defence again with that little pass, trying to be Benji Marshall when he's going into contact on the right-hand side, nearly getting dragged into touch. we've seen little glimpses of brilliance and little bits where you think, oh, do you know what? You can see why he played so many times for a very good Parramatta side. Whereas sometimes you think, has this bloke played 200 games in the NRL or have we got a cameo version? Because I want him to get it right, but sometimes he's a very frustrating player to watch, in my opinion. He's one of them who you're so angry because you know what he probably can do, and then he does something totally different, cost you the tackle, where now in defence, and then we end up getting a try conceded down his side. That right-hand side, we'll discuss what we think it should be after the interview with Jenna, but again, it's just a bit of alarms, isn't it, already with that, how easy we kind of made metres down that side and how many mistakes came both in offence and defence.
Yeah, it'd be great, you know, people are watching this and people listening to get their views on Brad Takarangi, because he's all just a bit, isn't he? It's all just a bit, you know, shoulda, woulda, coulda. We're all waiting for him to play, put in that 80-minute performance, but we're not quite seeing it yet, are we? We're seeing glimpses.
Do you think, like, for 5 minutes he's like off his head, like, dude, let's go, and then he just kind of like stands there, like Greg Eden used to do when he'd knock on and look around when he played for us?
Yeah, and it's obviously, it's in his personality, isn't it? It's part of him, how he plays. It's not, he hasn't come to Rovers and suddenly changed his playing style or anything like that. So obviously he's been successful in his career the way he plays, but at the moment it's just not 100% there, is it? Some of his passes are off. Some of the collisions he comes into, he seems to be a bit half-hearted, seems to be ambling into the runs almost like, but maybe that's because he's trying to keep a loose running style, so he's got the ability to then make an offload. And like I said, mate, it's just, he's nearly there. It's a nearly performance each time. And like you said, we're going to talk about the right edge. Obviously, people are saying his best position is in the centre, which I think it is. I definitely don't think he's a second row. I don't think he's a halfback. So he's going to be there for the season at centre. I think what's key for me with Brad Takarangi is in forming a partnership with a winger. Yeah. And for me, this is going to be really important for the season ahead, that we need to get that right edge sorted. We saw it with Wigan. I think every try was down that right edge. And we can't continue to concede points on that right edge. And the quicker we can work out a partnership with our centre and wing on that right edge, Takarangi is almost nailed on to be our number one centre. I think that's a definite. So you've got Wood, Crooks, Ethan Ryan. I think we need to pair him up, one of them to pair up with Takarangi very quickly and get that partnership working, because I think if we don't, it's going to be to the detriment of us and our ability to stop conceding tries.
Yeah, and it'll definitely be a target point, won't it, for our opposition, so we need to get that sorted quick. So, of course, Hull Kingston Rovers going down in round one to Wigan Warriors, 24-10 at Sewell Group Craven Park. Before we go into my interview, mate, we're going to speak about some good news for the women's team as well. That was announced about 30 minutes before we went live. They've actually formed a big landmark sponsor, Atropa Blood Clinic, who a few of my friends actually work for, and they've got a lot to do with FC and York as well, so they're getting involved. But Paul Aiken said, "Today's a proud moment. When we brought the women's team under the club remit, we made a commitment to give it the support and resources it needs to become a Super League side. Atropa's support will allow us to invest in the programme and give the team everything they need ahead of a big year of Championship rugby." I think that's really good, isn't it? Because we know the women's team's a part of the club now, but there isn't a load of money involved in it. It's very much off their own back. And, the people who coach and graft as well, Ben Parker, we had him on the show, I think, that we've had Wayne, obviously, his uncle. Check that Heritage Cast out as well. But having a good women's team, I think, is the way forward. The game's getting bigger. We've got the Women's World Cup as well. And it'd be nice, I think this year is going to be good to see a women's derby, but it's just nice that the club are appreciating them, because the girls don't get paid. They're doing it off their own back. They're travelling to Cumbria, because it's obviously, there's a lot of amateur clubs in their league as well. They're travelling big miles on a weekend, and most of them girls will work. You've got a few youngsters who are at college, but still, it's nice to see the club getting the official shirts, even little things like wearing this year's kits. It just makes them feel a little bit more of a Hull Kingston Rovers player. So good on Paul Aiken and good on Atropa getting involved with the girls.
Yeah, 100%, mate. And you know, we've seen the women games raising profile for a good couple of years now, haven't we? And I think it was important that the Rovers brought the women's team into the, and that the girls, females, set up into the club, rather than it being part of the community trust. And this sponsorship deal is that helps them take to that next step. You know, like you said, little things like wearing the same kit as the rest of the teams is a big thing, because it means, you know, you feel part of who you're representing. It's going to be a step up in class, I think, this season for the women's team. You speak to Ben Parker, he'll be the first to admit that. They've made a couple of signings, as have a number of sides in that championship. So it's going to be a tough old season. And they actually take to the field, don't they, for the first time on Sunday when they take on Wakefield Trinity at the University of Hull. They're going to play a game of 4 20-minute quarters. It's going to be a tough test, and I think they're looking forward to it. So yeah, hopefully we might get to see a women's game on Craven Park this season.
Yeah, is that a friendly? Because at Wakefield, is it a friendly?
Yeah, it's a friendly. First hit out of the season.
I remember on the Our League app, I know Wakefield played, I think, Leeds or Wigan at Wakefield's ground. I remember that being on, so they must be in the Super League, I imagine. I'm going to do a bit of research on that. So good luck to the girls. Anyhow, we'll be following them and keeping up to date with their season as it goes ahead. And you mentioned the University of Hull. That leads us on to our next point, the reserves. We've spoke so much about the reserves and how it gets bigged up and how we need it to be vital for all Kingston Rovers development and that stepping stone between under-19s and first team. We know now the derby on Friday, it's going to be called the Johnny Whiteley Trophy, a bit like what Hull and Saints do, first team for Steve Prescott, over two legs, and the winner takes that for the reserve campaign. We've kind of swapped because at first that there was a lot of uproar saying, why aren't we playing at Craven Park? But tell us a bit more, Chris, because I believe that we're just playing at Hull FC's ground. That's where their academy and reserves are going to play this year. So we will hopefully have a reserve game at Craven Park.
Yeah, and if you remember, originally the game was scheduled for the Saturday, wasn't it? It was scheduled for the Saturday Hull would have been playing Saints and we are playing Huddersfield. They moved it to the Friday night and it was going to be at Craven Park, 7 o'clock kickoff. I think a lot of people were excited about that, being early on in the season, chance to get, you know, probably a four-figure crowd in Craven Park to watch the game. I think the reason that it's been switched, so what's happened is we've now switched it so it becomes a Hull home game, and we're going to play the game against Hull, our home game at Craven Park later on in the season. And from what I'm hearing, the reason being is they want to protect the pitch at Craven Park. You only have to look out the window to see what the weather's like at the moment. Yeah. There's a good chance there's going to be a lot of rain over the next couple of days. So probably quite rightly, they want to protect the pitch. The game's now switched to the University of Hull. It's going to be played on their 3G pitch, which is obviously going to be a different experience for some of the players, although the lads in the Rovers camp will probably be used to it, as will the Hull lads, because they've been doing a lot of pre-season training in there. So it probably won't be that new to them. Obviously, the surroundings aren't that great as a spectator if you want to watch the game. But what I would say is, if you've been down there, you'll know you're very close to the action, and it's probably the closest you'll get to being, you know, the rugby league pitch. So it'd certainly be an eye-opener. But it just... I don't know what to think about this reserve game at the moment, Joe, because I've got no idea whatsoever what that squad's going to look like. I posed a question to James O'Brien about what the protocol is around announcing squads, etc.
He said it'll be a farce, didn't he?
Yeah, he said it was a farce. I've seen Keith Leave announce that some of their first team players are going to be playing for Bradford in their reserve game this weekend. So I expect Dewsbury players might feature for Rovers. Obviously, it's our partner club. First team players from Rovers, I haven't got a clue who could feature in there.
Well, even now, because Albert Vette is missing, you've got Lachlan Coote, who's not going to be playing. We've picked up a few injuries. Tony Smith now will probably be thinking, well, I'm not going to play Tom Garrett on the Friday in the reserve because we might need him on Saturday. So is that going to dampen it? It's one of them, isn't it? It's a great concept. But after two rounds, when you've got a load of injuries and the first team takes priority, you're probably going to be seeing a lot more of the under-19s, which can benefit them.
Yeah, it can benefit them. I suppose...
But the fans will want to go to see the likes of, like we mentioned a few weeks ago, didn't we? We thought the team had been Ethan Ryan, Will Dagger, Jimmy Carnos, maybe captain in it. Whereas now, you might be seeing a bit more of an inexperienced derby instead of, because I imagine Hull won't field any first teamers because they've got a lot of injuries. So I imagine it'll be very much the 19s, and Rovers will have about three or four first team players. Maybe not even that, it'll be a lot of the youngsters.
Yeah, and for me, I'm scratching me at the mechanics of the game. So this squad will not have trained together.
No.
Because there's no way that Dewsbury players will have been across. So at no point will Danny Maguire have got this group of players who are going to play tomorrow night together. So what's the playbook? How does it work, Joe? Because how many times have you turned up, other than at amateur level, with a group of players and said, right, lads, we're going to go out and play now?
Yeah, I mean, I did it a few times for Newcastle, and I know Brad Clav, one of my mates, when I went to Newcastle, he went to Wigan and Saints reserves on loan, and he said 1 week he played for Wigan against Hull FC reserves, and the week after he played for Saints against Wigan reserves, and he played for Wigan reserves the week before.
Yeah, but you're talking about one player there, one player fitting.
Well, this is 17, isn't it?
This is 17.
And I mean, even with the playbook, I stated that they'll all be playing the same stuff, but like you mentioned, they might have 6-7 Dewsbury lads coming across who play totally different, play what Lee Greenwood want to play, is different style. And I even remember when it happened a little bit in 2020. I mean, you had like the late Jordan Cox, you had Marvin Lee, who'd played for the academy a few years back, and it was kind of just like, we'll make up the numbers with a few players who used to play for the academy. I remember Chris Heal got a run out, and it was one of them, really. And I hope it doesn't turn into that, because people will lose interest. It should be a real humdinger on Friday. I'm not going to be able to make it. I wish I could. It sounds like a really good game. Are you going to get yourself down? Because I know a lot of people will be put off, because especially with the weather now, they're not going to be able to sit in the West Stand. They're going to have to stand on the whole uni, getting absolutely drenched. And if the wind takes hold there, it could be a very low quality affair.
Yeah, and if anyone who is hoping to go down and watch the game wants to do it, it's £5 for adults, £3 for children. There's nowhere to sit. So if you do need to sit down, be warned. I just want to ask you, Joe, about this partnership with Dewsbury, because if we are going to have lads from Dewsbury playing, bear in mind they play Widnes on Monday night in a televised game live on Premier Sport. We ain't seen their best players coming and playing for Dewsbury, are we? Which, you know, I think we'd have been foolish to expect. So are we expected to see their promising youngsters? Are we going to have Dewsbury reserve players playing in our reserves to make up numbers? You know,
I imagine it's going to be a bit of both, buddy. Yeah, you'll get people who have been injured and on the comeback, won't they? Because, again, even though there is a league system, let's be honest, give it 4 or 5 weeks, there'll be a clear runner, which will probably be Wigan or Saints, and the rest will just be playing for making up the numbers, I imagine. So it'll be a lot of people getting game time. You will be seeing maybe, and that's no disrespect, if they can't get in Dewsbury's team who are struggling in the Championship, they're only going to have to play against the likes of Wigan reserves. It's really good for them, but is the standard going to be good? Is that going to dismantle our team who are playing? The young lads, they're not going to be playing with the best people. Is it worth them going on loan? Like, who's gone on loan for us? Tom Wary, is he back at Rochdale? Like, has he made the best decision doing that, playing week in, week out in League One, rather than a bit of a mismatch? It's such a shame, because, again, it seemed like it had a lot of potential, but there's loads of question points and loads of talking points. And probably because of the timing of Johnny Whiteley passing as well from Hull side, but from both clubs, there hasn't been much communication, or there hasn't been much on social media plugging in.
No, and maybe that's deliberate to reduce the interest, because, you know, you can't have a massive crowd there anyway. So no. Maybe it's been on purpose. Before we move on, just very quickly, one person who probably will be playing tomorrow night, and we know his dad keeps in touch with us, is Mr. Dawson. How do you think, I'm sure he'll be chomping at the bit to line up tomorrow night. And where do you see him maybe featuring for Rovers this season?
Yeah, barely. I mean, we only saw him for the last 15 minutes, didn't we, of the Dewsbury game. I mean, Sean always messages, he seems a really nice kid. I know his other son, Roman, plays for Hull FC, so there might be a family tie eventually in a few years. I think Bailey, I'd love to see it. When I spoke to him, when he knew that he was playing against Dewsbury, I said, I hope he plays in the reserves, but maybe going out on loan. I mean, he'll play predominantly for the under-19s as well. I believe he still fits in that bracket. I believe he's 19. But definitely, I mean, I could see him, if he got a few games for Dewsbury, that'd be good. I think he's still 2 or 3 years away, and you'll probably note that as well, to get his size, especially playing as a second row, leading into like a loose forward role. He needs to probably bulk up a little bit. But I think there's promising signs there with him, Connor Barley, Zach Fishwick, trained with the first team. You'll see him playing. He's got a better beard than me and you, and the kid's 17. So I think the Rovers players, what they are doing, they're going to be playing a lot of rugby, and that's the bonus of this. Let's be having it right. It might not be the most structured, it might not be the best, but we are seeing these lads play every single week there or thereabouts. So, oh, look at you repping the club shop. You need to get a podcast one.
Hey, and that's retro,
an old,
now, isn't it?
That's retro. An old badge.
I've gone retro.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to buy Chris's bottle, put it in the comments. But no, mate, before we go on to my interview with Jenna, we'll wrap up with the reserves. But yeah, as long as they're playing, good luck to Bailey and all the lads who will be playing in the derby. I'm sure we'll see PLT. Get yourself there at Hull University. Is it 7:30 kickoff?
No, it's 7 p.m. kickoff.
7 p.m. kickoff. £5 for adults, £3 for concessions or youth. So best of luck there. So me and Chris will leave you for the next 17 minutes or so. I spoke to Sky Sports' Jenna Brooks earlier and we discussed Hull Kingston Rovers and Super League in 2022. So we'll grab a cuppa and we'll be back in the next 20 minutes. It's absolutely brilliant that Super League's back, Jenna. Obviously, you was there at the Totally Wicked Stadium last week. A bit of a humdinger between the grand finalists last year, Catalan and St Helens. Bit of biff in the first 10, 15 seconds. Gil Dudson going for a yellow, but definitely set the standard for what should be a really intriguing 2022 because it's got all the hallmarks and all the credentials of maybe one of the best seasons Super League's ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. And fingers crossed that you're spot on there. I mean, we were all so much looking forward to that opening game, grand final rematch. St Helens, though, don't they just look like they've picked up where they left off? They were so dominant. They were brilliant in attack, in defence. The new recruits performed. And you're right, it was feisty. That hit, Dylan Napa going, that red card. I mean, that was intense. I think Steve McNamara post-match was questioning it a little bit, which I kind of put him on the spot. I started laughing when he said, I didn't really see it. You know, I haven't watched it back yet. It was a clear red. Everyone knows Dylan Napa. He's a physical player. That's one of the reasons that Steve McNamara would have brought him to the Catalan Dragons. But it was so good. It's exciting. I think, Catalan probably started with a few nerves, but St Helens, as I said, they look like they are the team to beat. I do think from that opening round, though, it was the Leeds-Warrington game, wasn't it, that really stood out. Both Leeds and Warrington. I guess Warrington I was a little bit disappointed with. I've tipped them to go all the way this year and win the grand final. Yes, there's already been jokes on Twitter. Jenna's tipped Warrington. Finally, Warrington's year, blah, blah, blah. But I just think, you know, Daryl Powell's a brilliant coach. George Williams, Gareth Widdop in the halves. But Leeds, they impressed. They were phenomenal. Blake Austin wasn't even playing. I think tomorrow night, I'm not sure when this is going live, but Friday night, the live Sky game is Wigan against Leeds. Wigan was the other team that impressed me in that opening round. I know you're not going to want to hear it, but obviously they beat Hull KR. I was in Toulouse for that game, so I wasn't on the touchline and I caught the second half, but I have since seen highlights of that game. And Wigan look like a completely different side to me. They've got a new coach in Matt Peat, who I was fortunate enough to sit down with at the Super League season launch. I did a sit-down interview with him, and I was really impressed by what he had to say. He's obviously, he's never really played the game, but he's been involved with Wigan for such a long time. He deserves this shot, and I really hope he takes it. And he's so focused, and he believes that his team this year can win silverware. And going off that performance, I think he's probably spot on.
I think they've got a really good chance, Anthony. And obviously, when it was announced that we was playing him in round one, we did a lot of research on Matty Peat. And I think one of the biggest signings this year is probably Sean Wayne, the England coach, going back to Wigan. And you could see that defensive grittiness, that one, that die for attitude that Wigan have probably lacked the past few years. And we'll go on to the Rovers' performance soon, but I think Wigan, they're really impressed. And Jai Field coming back, I thought Cade Cust from Manly was really good dominating the halves.
Yeah.
And I think you've got to put your hand up from a Rovers' perspective. Sometimes you get beat by a better team that wants it more. And I think Wigan, they've got a lot of critics to prove this year. But I'm looking forward to seeing a young English coach in Matty Peat progress. And what a better mentor than Sean Wayne that's just above him. So it should be a really exciting year for the Warriors. I think they've got some really, really good young kids. You look at Leeds as well with Mikolai, Cam Smith, Harry Newman, Jack Broadbent coming through with us. I think going into a World Cup year, Jenna, obviously you being an Aussie, you'll want them to win. But I think if you're looking from an English perspective, we've got some good young talents coming alongside the likes of Will Price, Mikey Lewis at Hull Kingston Rovers. So Sean Wayne's going to have a tough task at the end of the year because there's definitely an abundance in each position where we have lacked that over the past few World Cups.
Yeah, definitely. I just want to go back on something you said there. Yes, I'm Australian. I am a proud Aussie, and you're right, I do want to see Australia do well, but I also understand how important it is for the game over here. And I'm obviously, I live over here, this is my home now. I want Super League to continue to grow. I want this league over here to be hugely successful. And I think a huge step towards achieving that would be if England can win the World Cup. I don't, you know, I hope this doesn't go out in Australia or no Aussies are listening, but I wouldn't be disappointed if England, you know, men's, women's, wheelchair, it would be great if we could see an England side lift that trophy at the end of the year. But yeah, you're right. There's so much young talent out there on show. And I think with COVID the last couple of seasons, it's enabled these younger players to step forward on the big stage and just show what they're capable of. And it's really exciting. It's an exciting time to be around rugby league in this country, that's for sure.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think another country where it is growing as well is France, and that's due to the success of the Dragons, but also Toulouse Olympique. Obviously, you was over there for the opener against Huddersfield on Saturday. Didn't go to plan with the result-wise, and I know was the restriction with the crowd, but tell us a bit about your time to Toulouse, because I went there in, 2017 when we was in the Championship. I really liked the place. I know it would have been February, it would have been very cold for you, but I think that has the credentials as well to be a really good marking point for people going over there. Especially for Rovers, we play Catalan in March, so it's going to be pretty cold. We won't have many fans over there, but we play Toulouse twice, one in April and one in the summertime. So I think it's another hotbed for rugby league away fans to go. And I'm just hoping that they can have a bit of, you know, a bit of success on the pitch as well, just from a marketing perspective for the Super League as well, because at the minute it hasn't gone to plan with obviously all the COVID regulations and the vaccines. They're struggling a bit at the Olympique at the moment.
Yeah, they are. I wish we had this conversation before I went, because here I am. I've never been to Toulouse. Yes, I've been to Perpignan. I've been to, you know, Paris. I've done quite a bit of travel through France. I've never been to Toulouse before. And here I am thinking, oh, okay, it's freezing in the UK. I'm going to the south of France. It's going to be nice. I'm just going to take a really light coat. Yes, it was freezing. Yeah. I am always cold, and I need to remember that. I am always cold in this country. I work in Super League. Obviously, it's a summer sport. I have never been in like a T-shirt or a short sleeve shirt pitch side at all in the 2 years that I've been covering this game. And as I say, it's meant to be a summer sport. It was freezing in Toulouse. It was exciting for me to go. I feel like I was, I mean, everyone was disappointed with the result, with what Toulouse dished up against Huddersfield. I think they've got a huge challenge ahead of them. There's so many limitations for Sylvain Aulèze. He, you know, the timing of the promotion, they have little preparation, little time to actually recruit players. And then as you touched on there, all of the issues in France, France still have really tight restrictions with COVID. And of course, their captain, Jono Ford, has left the club. It doesn't sound like Marc Carella is going to play again. Two of their best players, two of their, you know, players that have been part of that side for such a long time that have been able to help them succeed and actually reach the top flight. It's really sad to see that they won't be part of the team anymore. Post-match, I spoke to Sylvain and I asked him, you know, how recruitment's going and from that game where he feels he needs to strengthen. And he put it quite bluntly, and he needs to strengthen all over the pitch. Those players are inexperienced. I mean, I say that there are a lot of experienced former Super League players in that team, but they haven't been playing in the top flight that frequently or that recently, I should say. And it's just, I just don't think he's going to be able to bring in any new bodies within the next few weeks. And if they continue to play with the team they have, I just don't see them winning a game this year.
No, I think I totally agree with you. I mean, you look at even, we have Mitch Garbutt and Junior Vava, who was playing for us 3 or 4 years ago when we were struggling in Super League. And that's no disrespect to them guys. They're very good in their division, but I think it really is going to be tough. And I think Huddersfield definitely put them to the sword. We're playing Huddersfield this week. And so before we speak about Rovers, what did you think of the Giants? Because Ian Watson's got a big calibre. Obviously, he came over from Salford with a big reputation. He brought a lot of his players over. But I really like the look of this Huddersfield side. I don't know about you. I love that Danny Levi. Hooker, I thought he controlled the pace. They've got the young kids in Wardle. I thought Luke Yates at 13 or prop, wherever he wants to play. They've got talent all across the board, and that's without McGilvery didn't play, Lewitelli didn't play, and Will Price, the marquee man, the boy that everybody's talking about. So they've got a really good side. And I think come Saturday at the John Smiths, we need to be on our A game, because if we start like we did against Wigan, it could be a tough ask, because they're looking to go a little bit better than they did in 2021, because Ian Watson's had a lot of money from Ken Davey pumped at him. And I think they're a team that everyone's looking at to see where they can finish.
Yeah, you're right there. You didn't even mention the senior twins. They were outstanding.
Yeah, Lewis
they?
And Inia, yeah.
Inish, yeah, yeah. On either wing, they were fantastic. Denny Levi was our player of the match. I feel like he's really recruited well. Last year, it was his first year. I think he had a lot of pressure. To be fair, he's probably got more pressure on his shoulders this year, Ian Watson, the head coach, to succeed, because he did so well with Salford, leading them to grand final, Challenge Cup final. But before a game was played this season, I actually tipped Huddersfield as a surprise package this year. I can see them going a long way. I don't know if they're going to win silverware this year, but I definitely think that they'll be there at the end. And Ian Watson has made it so clear that he's got one goal this year, and that is to make the playoffs, and that's the minimum. And he is somebody who doesn't really seem to let pressure get to him, which is a good thing. Because as I just mentioned, I think there is a lot of pressure on him. Ken Davey as well, as you know, you said he's got a lot of money. They've spent a lot of money on bringing in players. But I do like the Huddersfield side this year. And I'm interested to see how they go in round two. And then, of course, when they take on Hull KR, I think we're going to see some exciting games from Huddersfield in 2022.
Yeah, let's hope Saturday's not one of them from our perspective, but you never know. Yeah. But I think if we're going to Hull Kingston Rovers, I remember when you came on our season review and you said, and we agreed, we had the biggest challenge for Rovers was a lot of teams now, the play now, and if we're going to play the same gameplay, you've got to mix it up a little bit. Rovers didn't do that in round one. And when I'm recording this with you, me and Chris haven't done our talk yet, but I'm going to speak a lot about how Rovers didn't really change it up. And when Wigan was very aggressive in the middle of the park, we'll be honest, I think a lot of our senior guys were a bit startled. I thought Jordan Abdul struggled in the middle. He tried to dictate it, probably playing a little bit too much. But one guy who we recruited from Huddersfield, who didn't have his best game and not the best debut in history, Sam Wood, who gifted the Warriors two tries, he's got a massive challenge going into Saturday's game. I do believe he'll still get picked. I think Tony Smith's going to back him. But I know you would have seen the highlights. It's not the best, especially from a fan's perspective, but not a neutral, because you know how much stick the bloke's going to get on social media. But for Sam Wood, it won the best debut and probably summed up Hull Kingston Rovers' performance. Very flat, but round one, nothing to worry about, but something does need to change it on Saturday.
Yeah, and I mentioned pressure on Huddersfield before. I think there's a bit of pressure probably on Hull KR too, because they had such a great season last year. They were the surprise package, weren't they? They kind of went through and did better than a lot of people would have thought they did. As I said earlier, I wasn't at that game, but I think Coote had a quiet game. I was quite surprised by the fullback, and there's a lot of expectation on him. He was so dominant in that St. Helens side. I think it's going to take him a while to settle in, and once he does, I think that we'll see what Hull KR are capable of this year. And I just love Tony Smith. I mean, I listened to the post-match interviews, and he just stated it. He was quite frank, wasn't he? He said that Matt Peat out-coached him. Yeah. And you just got to, I mean, Tony Smith, I've said it before, he's one of my my favourite coaches in Super League. He's just so honest. And I wouldn't worry too much if you're a Hull KR fan. I think round one, it is hard to judge on teams' performances, because there's so much nerves going in. There's a number of new players in the side, and it's just going to take a while for them to gel.
Yeah, and when we're actually recording this, I mean, the rumour mill in Hull, Jenny, you won't realise it unless you actually live in Hull and you're from the city, but I get texts being affiliated with a podcast 24/7, and there is a little rumour at this moment in time, which is 4:02, that Lachlan Coote's actually picked up a knock in training, so I'm sure you guys will find that out.
Really?
I hope what I've been told is very wrong, because sometimes the source that I've been told by is normally right, and apparently it's a hamstring strain. So let's pray that that's not right for Lachlan Coote. But yeah, I'm sure you guys will find that out before we do. And
I'm going to get on the phone right now, Joe. Yeah. I'll let you know.
Definitely. And then I can say, because someone's joke out is the lead rumour mill spinner for Hull Kingston Rovers. But tonight, obviously, Super League round two, we move on to Huddersfield on Saturday. But you're at an interesting game at the Halliwell Jones tonight, at Warrington against Cass, Daryl Powell against Lee Radford. Powell obviously going against Castleford for the first time since leaving. that's got the, you know, the credentials of being a really good game. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys on Sky tonight, because I think it'll be, could be the game of the round, 100%. I think Daryl Powell's going to put a lot into it. Looking forward to seeing like Matauti and Mamo go up against their old teams.
Yeah,
could be a really good.
And you know, they used to play together at Newcastle as well. So
yeah,
there's a lot of history with those two players. But there's so many exciting head to heads tonight. Something I plan on asking both coaches who they're most looking forward to seeing. But you're right, I think it's going to be an exciting game. Daryl Powell is doing his very best to play down, you know, having to take on his former side. He was at Cass for what, 8.5 years, almost 9 years. I don't care what anyone says, there's going to be emotion on show. He's going to get stick from the travelling fans. It's going to be exciting. Castleford are going to be desperate to right their wrongs from last week. Lee Radford, I saw on social media, which can be such a horrible place at times, he got a lot of stick from Cass fans. And as I said before, it's round one. It's such a long season. There's so much time to go, so many games to be played. But yeah, tonight's going to be a fantastic game. So make sure you're tuning in, because I think we're main event from 7:30, kickoff, of course, at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, final question before I let you get off. You've had a few new additions, haven't you, with John Wilkin and Jamie Jones Buchanan? And I think the beauty of it this year, and you mentioned social media is a horrible place sometimes. I've seen a lot of, with the new Channel 4 deal, with what's happening on the Sportsman, Premier Sports as well. It's rugby league being shown. That's all we want. We don't have to compare it and say what's the best. As long as the game and the people who are covering it love the sport and present it in the right way, that's all we want. And I think with the additions of JJB and Wilkin, people aren't going to agree with them. People are going to have stuff to say, but it doesn't matter. You've got two really good ex-players who've been there and won absolutely everything in the game. So it's going from strength to strength, isn't it? The coverage all around the board, which is great to see.
Yeah, it is. So what are you saying? Was there negative posts on social media about Sky?
A lot of people are trying to compare straight away. Do you know, with new Channel 4 and stuff,
it makes us laugh. We've seen some of the comments. There's been some positive comments, but there's been a lot of negative comments, and it's just life, isn't it? People, and it's rugby league. I feel like rugby league fans, they're great because they're so passionate and they're so willing to put their thoughts out there, and they just want to see the game in the best light. They think they know what's right. A lot of these fans don't really see how much work we all put, not just Sky, I'm BBC, Channel 4. We all put so much hard work into what we deliver to the fans. And, you know, I think you just have to laugh it off. Try not get involved. Try not read too much into it. And just enjoy the game. Like, we're all doing our best to bring you as much coverage as possible. And let's just get behind the sport as a whole and tune in and get Sky's figures up, viewing figures up, get Channel 4's viewing figures up, get people tuning into the BBC, the Super League show. Like, let's just get people talking about Super League. That's all we want, right?
Yeah, definitely, because we love the game, don't we? And we want to show to the rest of the UK and the world what we can produce, and it's absolutely great to see. But Jenna, thank you for speaking to us again. We really appreciate your time. Best of luck with tonight's, obviously, game and your interviews and for the rest of the season, because we love watching it on Sky Sports, so long may it continue. But thanks, and hopefully we can speak again soon.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jenna. See you later. Perfect. Can you hear me, Chris? Are we back?
Yeah, Joe, very good interview there. First time I've seen you look a bit starstruck.
Ah, oh, well, that's why she had to turn a mic off, a camera off. So. But yeah, although at the end, for the last 5 seconds, she actually did come on camera, but she said she thought Barry and Terry was behind her eating in the car behind. So she said, I imagine them coming on and giving gestures or winding her up if they're on camera. That was her reasoning why. But yeah, really good to speak to her, and I think the fact she wants to give a time for us, and she said she's going to come back on mid-season, it's really good to have contacts like that, because she brings a bit of a neutral view, and she's really obviously great at speaking. And, you know, on Sky Sports Main Event now, it's nice that they're getting involved with a podcast, because we, you know, it just makes us look a little bit more professional, doesn't it?
Can we file her away in the friend of the podcast cabinet?
Best friend, two appearances.
Best friend. There you go, Keith Pollard, if you're listening, you've got some competition now.
Yes. Oh, no, we're not replacing Keith anytime soon. But thank you to Sky Sports reporter Jenna Brooks for that interview there. And thanks for listening, guys. So we will move on to the round two clash with the Huddersfield Giants. I'll name the teams before we speak about our 17 and we speak about our tipping league with the lads who were on the forum last week as well. So I will start with the home team. So Ian Watson welcomes back Jermaine McGilvery and Ricky Luatelli. He has Tui Lolohea, Theo Farge, Chris Hill, Danny Levy, Michael Lawrence, Josh Jones, Chris McQueen, Luke Yates and Matty English. Joe Greenwood, Owen Trout, Sebastian Ikaifo, Adam O'Brien, Oliver Wilson, Leroy Cudjoe, Lewis Senior, Oliver Russell, Innes Senior and Ollie Ashall-Bolt. The Robins announced that Lachlan Coote is in the 21-man squad, but we know he won't be available. So we have Brad Takarangi, Sean Kennedy-Dowell, the captain, Ryan Hall, Jordan Abdul, Matt Parcell, George King, Dean Hadley, Kane Lynette, Matty Staughton, Jez Litton, Corbin Sims, Elliot Minchella, Jimmy Carnhorse, Will Dagger, Mikey Lewis, Ethan Ryan, Sam Wood, Greg Richards, Tom Garrett and Frankie Halton. So, Chris, let's speak about our 17 first. Have you got yours available or do you want me to go with mine?
Yeah, you kick off, Joe, and then I'll follow you, mate.
See, I'm going with this because I know you mentioned you don't see Takarangi as a second row, but I don't know what he's going to do with Jimmy Carnos. So at the beginning, I named Dagger, Ryan, Wood, SKD, Hall, Lewis, Abdul, King, Parcell, Staughton at prop, Lynette, Tacker and Minchella, and then Jez, Dean Hadley, Corbin and Frankie Halton on the bench. But I'm in a bit of a mismatch. Is Jimmy Carnhorst going to get on the bench maybe? Is he going to go with Greg Richards or Tom Garrett? Is he going to go with the prop forwards? It's so hard, but I don't know. If you're talking about, you can't really drop people on performances after one game, and I don't think he's going to. I do believe that Sam Wood and Brad Takarangi will take part 100%. But for me, if he's fit, I think you've got to play Ethan Ryan, mate. You've got to play Ethan Ryan. I remember at the beginning of the year, I said you've got to build a partnership with Ethan Ryan and Sam Wood. I'll stick by that. You know, I'll, you know, put my colour, lay my colours on the mast there. I do believe Ethan Ryan gives us a bit more speed, because I think if you're going off round one in the two pre-season matches, as good as we played against Dewsbury and Huddersfield in some spells, we do lack a bit of raw speed. And the fastest two players we've got are probably Ethan Ryan and PLT. And then you're looking at Jez, Matt Parcell, Mikey Lewis, but they're in the middle constantly. Out wide, I think if you can get Sam Wood in his natural position on his centre, where he really liked to play for the Giants, he's coming against his former team, so he's got a point to prove after a rubbish performance. But I just think him tapping it down to Ethan Ryan, you've got skill, speed and height in the centre role. And we've seen what Ethan Ryan could do when he was fit last year. That's the team I'd probably go with. I know you're going to disagree. That's why we love doing these podcasts, because everyone's got an opinion. I don't think that'll be the team, but that's how I'd have gone.
Oh, well, that's very helpful then, Joe. Thanks for that. No, I've gone Will Dagger at fullback, obviously in light of the news that Lachlan Coote is injured. I've kept with Wood and Takarangi, obviously SKD, Hall, Abdul Lewis, pick themselves. I've gone for Staughton at prop, with Parcell starting with George King. I've gone for Hadley and Lynette in the second row, with Sims starting again at loose forward. And then I've gone for a bench of Litton, Holton, Richards and Minchella.
Yeah, well, a good question there from Craig. Obviously, we'll get his tipping league results soon and we'll speak about that later on. But he said, do you start Minchella or do you give him another week? Again, you could make an argument he started for Dewsbury, but this is a bit of a step up. He's a starting player. He's going to start at loose forward more times than not now that he's fit again. But again, could we see him maybe on the bench and just getting introduced 20 minutes in, just playing as that third prop forward in the middle? Don't walk, just get out there, get back to used to the pace. If you can put your skill set on like we saw in 2020, that's absolutely great. But I do think Elliot Minchella probably gives us the kick up the arse that we need in the middle of the park, because against Huddersfield, at that ground, if you get on top early, and we don't normally do this, what's the stat you've got? We're absolutely rubbish at the John Smiths, and it might continue on Saturday, but I do think we've got to start strongly, because they like to dominate teams. They're very boring in the way they play. They like to get a bit of a clench, like a grapple hold of teams, and then they'll let the wingers. I thought the senior twins are really ones to watch out. we're going to have a tough competition on our hands. And you can tell why the bookies are probably giving it Huddersfield just swinging a little bit their way, because after the first two games of the respective teams, looks like Huddersfield might be in for a decent season. Yes, there was only against Toulouse, but they've got a lot of big, big squad depth because you're missing Will Price there. You still haven't mentioned McGilvery and Luatelli, who didn't play last week. So they've got that experience in the back line to bring in, and they still put 40 points past Toulouse.
Yeah, although let's say it was very, very poor to lose side.
And, yes, it was. Like,
I do fear for them, because if that's the best that they can pretty much come up with at the start of the season, it's not gonna get any better for them. And what I would say is, from that performance, Huddersfield didn't look that great themselves. Even though they're
beatable, mate.
Yeah, they managed to rack up some scores. I mean, the lineup from that Toulouse game was Lohi at fullback. You had Senior and Wardle, then Kudjo and the other senior brother. Farge and Russell, Hill, Levi, English, McQueen, Jones and Yates on a bench. You had Ashel Bolt, Greenwood, Trout, and you pronounce it, Joe?
Ikenifo.
Yeah. Add to that now, obviously, of course, McGilvery, Luatelli and Lawrence, you know, and that is a very strong Huddersfield Giants squad that we're going to be facing on Saturday, isn't it?
I think it's going to be hard to seal their drop as well, though, because I think will they put Lawyer here in the halfbacks? But then Ollie Russell, was it Wilson? Is it? He had a really good game.
14 points.
Yeah, 14 points. But then again, is he going to play the 6 and 7 in 6 and 7? And maybe one of the senior brothers go at fullback. Obviously, one of them's coming back from a loan spell at Wakefield. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, it's the weird out the Huddersfield, because they're very inconsistent. There's some weeks they look, especially if we're going off last year, some weeks there was absolutely unbelievable and some weeks there was rubbish. Obviously, we played them in the friendly, which will be 3 weeks on Saturday, you know, when we're playing. I think you know what to expect from them, but still, I think it's going to be a really good encounter. But Rovers just need to get on the board early and not start to panic, because what I've seen for so many years at the John Smiths, you get a try conceded, another try conceded. Within 15 minutes, you're 18-0 down and you're chasing the game thinking, these have been crap all season. How have we let this happen? And I think a game springs to mind when I did the Campese Heritage Cast. That happened in 2015. We got hammered there in 2016. You know, last year we got beat. We've only won 1 in 7, if that's correct, Chris, and that was last year with the famous Lee Gaskell Dav. So we don't have the best record against this Giants team, but Rovers definitely need to pick up the 2 points at weekend to kickstart 2022, because like I previously mentioned, we've got a tough 2 weeks coming up after that. Castleford on Sky, and then the best team in the league, the reigning champs, St Helens.
Yeah, and you know, you was right, Joe. We've only won 1 in the last 7 games against Huddersfield, and we've only won once in our last 9 visits. So, you know, we don't have a great record against Huddersfield Giants, do we? But you know what, mate? There's never a better time to turn it around than your next game, is there? And you know, no doubt that the Huddersfield squad looks very strong. The 3 returning players, I think, will definitely go straight into that starting lineup. You know, and you know, Huddersfield are making big raps. They're trying to encourage fans to get into the ground, aren't they, to boost the atmosphere. I think every season pass holder has been invited to bring 3 friends along with them for free. They've got a food festival, drinks festival. I think trying to replicate Craven Street a little bit at the ground. They're encouraging supporters of both sides to get there early and enjoy the festivities and make it a real big occasion. So, you know, any Rovers fans who are heading to, I don't know, what's it called now, the Huddersfield Stadium?
John Smith's in it now.
Is it still John Smith's? Yeah, it seems to change every time, doesn't it?
McAlpham, McAlpine. There's been a few names, haven't they? Yeah. It changes more than Sewell Group, Craven Park.
Yeah, but no, it's going to be, you know, the build-up to the game is going to be fantastic, and I hope the spectacle on the pitch lives up to it with a Rovers victory. I'm going to give you some what the bookies think now. So yeah. Thanks to Mark Charles, who supplied these. These are from N. Charles Bookmakers up in Bridlington. So if you're ever up there and you fancy having a punt, make your way over there. Huddersfield are 4-7 outright. Rovers are 7-5 with the draw at 18s. You've got Rovers plus 4 at 10-11, which obviously makes Huddersfield minus 4 at 10-11. Points margins, you've got 1-5 points victory. Huddersfield are 13-2. Rovers are 7-1. 6-10 points winning margin. Huddersfield are 9-2. Rovers are 6-1. 11-15 points. Huddersfield are 15-2. Rovers are 11-1, and then I can't imagine it being any more than this. But the 16-20 points winning margin is 7-1 Huddersfield and 12-1 Rovers. So obviously, as you probably expect, the bookies are going with making Huddersfield favourites. And it'll be interesting to see if the odds fluctuate a bit closer to Saturday's kickoff. Because with the squad news, Lachlan Coote, I think these odds came out before the news broke that Coote wouldn't be lining up for Rovers. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any change in them odds come kickoff.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I want to do, a new section. I always do a request a bit. So when that comes in, I'm going to put it on the podcast, see if people want to waste £5 on my request a bit. And if it ever comes in, then everyone owes me a pint. So guarantee I won't be buying any pints. I think I've had one come in the last 2.5 years, 3 years. So don't listen to me, but I'd like to do that. But yeah, mate, let's go on to our tipping league. Of course, we have Mark Lever, Michael Carter from Hull KR Sheds, and Craig Escrow, who have also done this for us, who was on our fans forum last week. The first game, we're probably going to not involve because we're 47 minutes in. And it's currently 12-4 to Warrington against Cass. Although I did have, let us have a look on my messages and we'll go from there. So Craig had Warrington and so did everybody. So, and I had Warrington as well, Craig.
And so did I.
Yeah, so we're all at Warrington. We're going to tomorrow's game. It's going to be a good encounter at the DW, which Wigan against the Leeds Rhinos. Craig has got Leeds. So has Mark, and Mike has got Wigan. I think just because of home advantage, I know Leeds nearly did so well last week against Warrington with a man sent off, James Bentley, quite early. I don't know. I just think Wigan look like they're going to be quite good this year, but so the Leeds. I've tipped them both to finish in the top half 100%. I think it's going to be a real good game, Chris, but Wigan just take the 2 points home for me. I think it's going to be a real close game.
Yeah, there was a lot made of that Leeds performance, weren't they? Especially after the sending off. And I think Warrington didn't look great, but obviously they did enough to get off the line and get the victory, which is probably what these early rounds are all about. I think Leeds are playing an interesting style of rugby, aren't they? I think they're looking to attack a lot more. But I think Wigan have got structures in place which make them a bit more defensively sound. And I think Wigan might be one of the early maybe pace setters in the league. So I'm going to go for Wigan victory.
Wigan as well. And then we move on to the Saturday games. We've got three. The first one is on Channel 4 at 12:30 at the MKM Stadium. It's Hull FC against St Helens. I think even though Hull beat Wakefield, we'll speak about Wakey in a minute, I think they're going to be very poor again this year. They didn't capitalise on a very weak Hull FC side who had 12 men for the last 15 minutes. They bombed a lot of chances. They had a lot of the possession. And I believe I've read a few stuff on their game against Hull last week. I think Saints will be too much for them. I think it could be a big scoring game for St. Helens. I think they look really comfortable and I can't see anything other than Saints taking 2 points home from West Hull.
Yeah, it's the second Channel 4 televised game, isn't it, of the of their new contract, their new deal. And obviously what you'd say is it's probably going to be an emotional occasion, obviously paying tribute to Johnny Whiteley as we did at the start of the podcast. Yeah. I think St. Helens obviously looked very good against Catalan. It's got St. Helens victory written all over it. Maybe emotion could come into it and Hull can find something a bit more, a bit different and you know, maybe leave a tribute to the late, great Johnny Whiteley. But for me, all I can see is a St. Helens victory.
Yeah, and all across the board there with the lads, they've gone for Saints as well. We move on to our game. So Craig has gone for Rovers. Mike has gone for Rovers. Mark has gone for Huddersfield. I am going to go for Huddersfield, Chris. I don't know. I feel like if we're doing a tipping league, I want to be honest. And obviously, I want Rovers to win. I just have a feeling with our record. Please prove me wrong, Rovers. But I don't know. I just think Huddersfield might start strong and be one of them teams that peter off. And we don't have the best record there. I hope we can turn up. But I just have this envision of after 20 minutes being 3 tries down and me and you looking at each other going, what the hell is this?
I'm going to go heart over head this time, mate. And I'm going to back Rovers. You know what? I think let's not be too down. Let's doom and gloom. I think there's a lot to come from this Rovers side. I think if Abdul Lewis, Parcell, Litton can dictate the pace of the game, I think if our forwards come front up and we get a bit of energy from there, I think if Takarangi, you know, gets his game going, there's a lot of positives from Rovers, you know. Let's not forget, you know, Will Dagger's been chomping at the bit to get this chance to play.
Yeah,
so he could come in and have the game of his life. So come on, let's keep positive. I'm going to go for Rovers victory.
Yes. I just want to get away from you in the tipping league, so I have to go opposite to you. That's all I'm doing. So So on and then, oh, 5 o'clock kickoff on Sky Sports as well. I didn't know it was on telly, but I probably won't make it home. We're going down the M62. But Catalan against Wakefield at 5 o'clock on Sky Sports Mix. The lads have all gone for Catalan. I imagine me and you are going to do the same. I think they'll have had an ass kicking this week from McNamara after a very poor last 60 minutes against the champions last week. And I think Wakefield looked very poor. I mean, I listened to a bit on radio against Hull, but they have bombed a lot of chances. I know the weather was horrendous, but that was the same for both teams. And I've seen the highlights. It doesn't look very pretty from the Wakefield perspective. And I just think Catalan will be too big, too strong. And obviously, it's an hard place to go anyhow is Perpignan. And I can only imagine one victor, and that's the French team.
Yeah. I think Wakefield obviously showed up against Hull, didn't they? But, you know, they still managed to struggle to overcome a Hull side down to 12 men for a large period of the game. I think Wakefield are probably going to be one of the sides that are down there with Toulouse. Catalan at home, you can't really write them off, can you? And especially on the back of a defeat to St Helens. I think McManara will really give them a good hiding and say, look, boys, you need to book your ideas up. So, yeah, Catalan victory for me.
And then wrapping up the weekend in Greater Manchester at the AJ Bell Stadium, it is Salford against Toulouse Olympique. Clean sweep for this one, I imagine. All the lads have gone Salford. A very good victory for them at the Menderhose Jungle last week. Bit of an upset against Lee Radford's side. And, you know, Mark Sneed was in the halves. We've seen him kick so many times, haven't we? For Hull, he seems to have done it again for Salford. And they scored a really good try from kickoff, a bit similar to ours last year. I don't know if you saw the highlights, Chris. But again, I think, like Jenna said to me earlier, I think Toulouse will struggle to pick up 2 points, and I don't think they'll travel well. They haven't named the squad yet. Obviously, they'll do that tomorrow at dinner time, but only one winner, and that's Salford, who will go 2 from 2.
Yeah, I think I'd have backed Salford before they beat Castleford, and I saw Toulouse play Huddersfield. I think even now I'll back Salford even more so after seeing that.
Yeah, so thank you guys. Obviously, this is the this has been the Red Robin podcast with me, Joe Playard, and Chris Johnson. We've had a really good episode. Thank you for Jenna Brooks for coming on the show, and obviously we'll remember the late great Johnny Whiteley, who we paid tribute to at the beginning of the show. So we'll sit, me and Chris will be there on Saturday at the John Smiths. Hope to have a big traveling red army or yellow and blue army, Chris, and if anyone sees us there, come and speak to us and tell us how much you love the podcast. And here's a pan of John Smiths for our favorite host of the Greatest Rugby League podcast.
Yeah, and also just a thank you to anybody who's watched us on Twitch for the very first time. Obviously, we announced during the week that we've got another platform to showcase the Red Robin podcast. So you can watch us on Facebook Live, you can watch us on YouTube Live, you can now watch us on Twitch. And also, of course, if you're listening to this on the podcast, you will know that you can listen to us on the podcast, the original way of listening. And also, stay tuned. Sunday night, we've got a very special heritage guest, Heritage Cast guest to announce. We're not going to reveal anything until Sunday, but it's going to be a bit of a whopper.
No, just a winner at the National Stadium, and no, it's not another episode with Paul Fletcher. Right, buddy mate, it's been great to speak to you again. Really good episode. I will see you on Saturday. Thanks for listening, guys. This has been the Red Robin podcast, sponsored by 360 Chartered Accountants and Budget Tires Auto Centre. Chris, I'll leave you to press the button, and we will see you.